Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Beatrice Soto. Beatrice is an architect, an environmentalist, a Latino outreach coordinator for Wilderness Workshop, and most recently, co-founder and treasurer for Voces Unidas, a network of Latinas and Latinos from Parachute to Aspen, whose goal is to ensure that the Latino communities are better represented at community discussions and decision-making tables in Garfield, Eagle, and Pitkin counties. Beatrice and I had been planning on an in-person interview, but COVID-19 had different ideas. We made other plans, and I contacted her by phone. We began our discussion with her earliest memories. So tell me about coming to the United States. Do you have memories of that?
My parents brought me to the United States when I was two. They literally crossed the Rio Bravo. They were young. They were probably in their early 20s. And my sister was six months old.
They crossed the river with you?
Yes, with me and my baby sister. While I was still a baby, I was two and she was 6 months. So that's when we first came, me and my sister, to the United States. But my father had a long history of working and living in the United States throughout his youth as well. We're from North Mexico. And then my father grew up in North Chihuahua and in North Baja. So he had worked and done drywall in California, in Texas, and, you know, kind of border states. So there was this really close connection between the northern states of Mexico and kind of the border states in the United States, where it was, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, it was really easy to pass and just kind of jump from one country to the next. And
it was a totally different time then, too, wasn't it? The border was fluid. People came and did work and went back, and that was the way life was then.
Absolutely. And that's how my father grew up. So he had this really strong relationship with the United States and had always kind of lived and worked in both countries.
So do your parents tell us, was it a harrowing time for your parents in that crossing? I mean, here they are with two babies, really, crossing a river. It must have been a really terrifying time for them.
You know, it's kind of interesting, but I do talk about these things with my mom, and she's like, you know, I can only imagine what her mother was thinking that she was doing, and she was crazy, and she was putting everything at risk. And, you know, she always says that, you know, when you're young, different things motivate you. And they really wanted to, you know, get ahead and buy a home and have a prosperous family and provide for their children, maybe some of the things that they didn't have when they were younger. And, you know, they really had this ambition to grow. My father had his own company. You know, we had our own home in the United States. So they were really hard workers, and they just had the vision of that this is what they needed and this is what we needed, right? Whatever they lacked when they were children. And now she reflects back on it and she always says, you know, it's interesting that that would not drive me today. But when I was young, that was definitely what drove them to take that type of risk and lifestyle.
Yeah, I can understand that as an older person going, oh, how did I, what made me make that decision? But I was young, and that was the reality then. Where did your family land?
Yeah, we were in Houston for a little while, and it seemed like it wasn't, you know, the salaries weren't really well paid, and my parents were really struggling, and they heard about, you know, a rumor that in Florida there was, you know, a lot of work and it was paid really well. So my parents kind of adventured towards Florida. They had never been to Florida, and they kind of took off a month ahead of us when we were still maybe 3 or 4 years old. And, you know, they left us with a family member, and they went out to Florida and they lived out of their car, and until they, you know, secured some jobs and were able to rent an apartment. And then once they felt we were ready to kind of reunite the family, we were taken to Florida. So I grew up in elementary school, basically. I did in Florida, in West Palm Beach. Even though in my family, our first language is Spanish, at school, I learned to read and write in English before I do it in Spanish.
What did your parents do for a living?
They had a drywall company. My father owned it. A lot of his friends and family were the ones that kind of worked with him. So
life was pretty good.
Absolutely. I never, as a child, I never realized that we were undocumented. I never felt that, you know, I knew they worked really, really hard, but that was my normal. I didn't realize that, you know, my parents working Monday through Sunday, you know, me only seeing my dad at night sometimes and sometimes not seeing him at all because they were always working. I felt that was normal. And I felt like every family lived like that. I didn't realize until I was older that they really worked really hard to be able to access that success.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My interview today is with Beatrice Soto. Beatrice is an architect, an environmentalist, and Latino outreach coordinator for Wilderness Workshop. She recently co-founded Voces Unidas, a network of Latino leaders from Garfield, Pitkin, and Eagle counties. What brought you from Florida to Colorado?
It was an interesting journey, Walter. After the amnesty of, I believe it was 86, my parents unfortunately weren't able to get into that process because they had already started a process and it didn't work out the way they expected. So they decided to move back to Mexico, and we were in Mexico for almost, I want to say like 8 years. And in that time, that's when my father dies. And when we are in Mexico, my mother starts to struggle. I mean, she has to provide for three kids, and she never finished her career as an educator. So in reality, she only kind of had to high school with her education. So she was struggling in Mexico, and she decides, you know, to come back to the United States when I'm a senior in high school. And, you know, I support her because I know she was struggling. It was really hard for me because at this point I was already kind of acculturated to the Mexican culture, and I was thriving and I was doing really good in school and I had friends and I was already, you know, a Mexican and, you know, reading and writing in Spanish and thriving at school. And we decided to come to Colorado, and I supported my mother in that decision. And that's how I graduated from Salt High School. And I've never really gone to any other place in the United States than Colorado since. I really like being in Colorado.
So you've experienced the process of being an immigrant a couple of times in your life, haven't you? I mean, you came to the United States young enough to where you learned English pretty quickly, and then suddenly you have to go back to Mexico. What was that like for you? Did you adjust pretty well?
I did. It wasn't easy, but I guess I was kind of used to adjusting. We had moved to different cities. I had been in different schools, and that was just the school in Mexico. And I've always been pretty, you know, keen to like social, I don't know, attitudes, and I pick up on things, and, you know, really quickly you learn how to blend, how to dress like people, how to speak like people to make sure that, you know, you're not like an other, right? You belong into that society. So it's really taken, you know, I guess I've developed that skill over my life, because you're right, I have had to immigrate to different countries and adapt. When I got to Mexico, my Spanish was very limited. It took a lot, you know, for a fifth grader to adapt to a language that you heard your parents speak, but I was losing it. I had to teach myself how to adapt to that culture.
So out of high school, you were drawn to architecture. Did that happen early in your life, or was that something that came later?
I always knew I wanted to be an architect. My parents, they worked in the construction industry. My father studied a career like in farming and ag, and he always said, you know, that he should have been a civil engineer. And I don't know, I guess just by hearing that and always working on construction sites, my parents were there and they would take me when I was a young child. I didn't know any other world. And the other careers that I saw, like being a doctor, admin, they didn't seem very appealing to me. And since I was like maybe in middle school, I knew I wanted to be an architect. When I graduated from Basalt High School, I was only here my senior year. I remember, you know, looking into universities here, and it was just so expensive and seemed like this impossible dream that I could never achieve in the United States. So I decided to go back to Mexico and be an architect. And it was definitely a good option for me to just go back.
You are an environmentalist and have really advocated for awareness towards climate change. Can you speak to that a little bit and how you see the role of Latinos helping with that effort?
A lot of the work that I've done in the past as an architect was usually with firms that had kind of an environmental lens towards them. And that really, you know, I felt right at home, and I really quickly grew a passion. Kind of as time progressed, you know, I kept seeing these spaces were very exclusive. There were just for a few that were, you know, thinking about this. And I always kind of felt myself being the only Latina. And it kind of surprised me because, you know, I talk about these things with my family. I talk about these things with my friends. And I'm like, why aren't we, you know, part of this movement? Why aren't we, you know, and that's where I kind of started focusing a little bit of my work, not just on environmental work, but how does this relate to social justice as well? You know, why aren't we all coming up with solutions together? If we're concerned about our environment, if we're concerned about our climate, you know, future generations, why is it just a few figuring out the strategies, figuring out what's going to work for all of us? And why are just a few thinking about this?
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. And my interview today is with Beatriz Soto. Beatriz is an architect and an environmentalist who recently co-founded Voces Unidas, a network of Latino leaders in the Roaring Fork Valley, who are dedicated to ensuring that all residents of our valley are informed and represented at the decision-making table. It's interesting how we print it on our money, but sometimes we forget that inclusivity and working out problems together is our strength, you know, e pluribus unum, from the many, one. On our best day, we like to talk about who we are, but we often leave out people, huge groups of people. As we've seen through this pandemic, we've left out a lot of folks.
The pandemic, it doesn't discriminate against, you know, age or wealth level or race. It's just going to, you know, hit all of us, and it's going to affect all of us. But I feel like the solutions and systems and the safety nets that are in place, we're not going to all have the same access to these safety nets. So I think it's just making it even more obvious, all the injustice and a lot of racism that has been built into our safety nets, into our communities, and into our systems that, you know, these are systems that were built hundreds of years ago when the world was really different, but we haven't changed them.
Right.
And they're still built to do what they were designed to do, was to serve a few. So I feel like this can be a great opportunity for us as a society and as a community to really say, you know, we have these systems in place that aren't working for our current times, that aren't working for all of us, that aren't really working for our community. It's dividing our community. It's weakening our community. And I think we really need to look at them and say, it's time to reinvent. It's time to reevaluate. And it's time to come up with solutions that can truly help us thrive and will make us resilient in the future.
Was that part of the reason that you founded Voces Unidas?
Absolutely. Just working within the Latino community and hearing Latino leaders that work in different institutions and different organizations, they always feel like, you know, a lot of my friends, they feel like a token within the organizations that they work in. They feel like, you know, they're just there to click the, you know, check the diversity box.
Yeah.
But sometimes these are really smart people. They're very creative. They know the solutions that can really help their community and can help the broader community, but they're not listened to because, again, they're not really there to speak out loud. So what we envisioned is, how can we help empower the leaders? Because there's a lot of leaders. How can we be a support network amongst each other? Because, you know, a lot of times we're all working in our little worlds. And we're, you know, we come in, confront situations where we're a little frustrated and we feel like we're not, you know, making our voices heard, or we need support within our own community. And this is where I feel Voces Unidas can really be a tool to make sure that, you know, the Latino voice is heard and that we are organized and we are building, you know, ourselves up.
Can you talk a little bit about the organization and what its purpose and its makeup is?
We kind of really started as a collaborative where we were bringing Latino leaders and elected officials to, you know, meetings where we can have like informal but honest conversations with the chief of police, with city managers. You know, it's like, what are the issues that you are worried about within the Latino community? How can we support you? How can we build each other up? And that's kind of how it started. And then really when COVID hit our community, we were realizing as Latino leaders, you know, I work environmental movements, environmental justice, public land issues. But even the people that the community that I reach out to, they were asking me, hey, Beatrice, do you know where I can find this resource? My family needs support with this. And I was like, I don't do this, but they have nowhere else to go. And I shouldn't be, you know, the person they're coming to. They should be going to public health. They should be going to the organizations that support Latinos. So if you realize that our governments and a lot of these nonprofits, they really haven't established a relationship with our community, a trusted relationship. So that's when a lot of the Latino leaders, you know, we kind of came together and formed our own work groups to make sure that we can support some of the organizations and government groups that are trying to serve the community, but they don't know how.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they have an emergency and, you know, they're scrambling to do the work that they haven't done in years. And that's when we realized, you know, there should be an organization led by Latinos, founded by Latinos with a Latino board and keeping, you know, accountable to the Latino community and making sure that we're representing our community accurately.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. And my interview today is with Beatrice Soto. Beatrice is the Latino Outreach Coordinator for Wilderness Workshop. She's a community activist who recently co-founded Voces Unidas, a network of Latino leaders who are dedicated to ensuring that all residents of Garfield, Pitkin, and Eagle counties are informed and represented at the decision-making tables. The COVID-19 pandemic has been overwhelming, as we can all attest, but it has been particularly hard on the Latinos in our communities. Well, I know you can't speak for the whole community, but I would like to ask you how, from what you understand, how the Latino community is doing during this pandemic. It hasn't been easy for them.
It hasn't, Walter. And, you know, I think around the world, we're going to see that communities that are marginalized, that are in poverty, that are uneducated, and have least access to resources are really going to be the communities that suffer the most. And this is just around the world. Now, if we kind of just focus on our little, you know, our valley, our cities and our towns, you know, it's who are those people? And we just want to make sure that, you know, whoever that is, that we all come out of this successful, that, you know, the virus doesn't spread, that the information is culturally and linguistically appropriate. And we just want to see, you know, a community that can, that is resilient and that all of us can thrive, not just a few. And make sure that everybody in our community is recognized for who they are and what they bring to the community, because otherwise we wouldn't be here. And we're all here to help, you know, our communities. We're all here to help our economies. We're all here to help our families. So I really think it should be a community effort that, you know, doesn't judge you on the fact of your immigration status, doesn't where you came from, how long you've been here. I think it should really just involve all of us. And this is such a great scale. You know, we're not that big of a city. We're a small community where I think if we really put the effort towards it, we can really, you know, have a great example of what a resilient, you know, inclusive, integrated community looks like.
How are domestic workers, healthcare workers, you know, a fair number of people in our communities are folks who take care of other folks. And a lot of those folks are Latinos, mostly probably Latinas, women.
Well, I think the majority of people that work in hospitality and do housekeeping are Latinas. The majority of the restaurants are run by Latino men. There's a huge population of Latinos that, you know, even if you're in your highest end Japanese restaurant in Aspen, you have Latinos in the back.
Yes, I've noticed that. Yeah, I've noticed that, definitely. It doesn't matter what kind of food it is.
Exactly. French cuisine or Italian or Japanese, you have Latinos in the back
exactly.
running the kitchen. All the construction industry is mainly run by Latinos as well. So, yes, you know, our families and our community are definitely being very impacted by COVID, unfortunately. So I think we're kind of facing the same issues all the community is facing, but definitely, you know, the lack of resources and information. And that's why it's been so hard to reach the Latino community, because they don't work alongside the government. They work outside of it. And we don't ask for help. You know, if we ask for help, we'll ask the cousin, the uncle, you know, the neighbor. But we never ask the government. We never really go to nonprofits for help, because this isn't, you know, really sometimes our place. We don't feel like the government is our government. And based on this misconception, people think that the government really reaches the Latino community, but we really don't. And even Latinos that were born here, that are American citizens, they have never asked for support from the government. So this is something that culturally we're not used to either. So it's been interesting, you know, trying to, you know, explain to people, this is your government and there is support, and you have the right to ask for help. This is our government.
Well, and yeah, the society moves along and is pretty comfortable with invisible workers. You know, they like it when things are going well. And then when it doesn't go so well, then it's like people become, quote unquote, a burden, when actually many of those folks are now redefined as essential workers, the people who pick up the garbage, the people who take care of your sick relatives, your nannies. it's been interesting, not only here in the Valley, but throughout the United States, for us to really take a look at what we value and what we should value going forward.
Absolutely. And I think you just hit a really important, you know, subject, is that, you know, as things are going well, cheap labor that's not going to, you know, ask for health care, that's not going to ask for paid vacation, that's very convenient for people. And, you know, I see a lot of our community that have Latinas that come and clean their homes, that, you know, take care of their children. I've seen, you know, I've gone to tons of house parties where Latinas are washing the dishes, and they have a gentleman that, you know, is a groundskeeper. And, you know, when it comes time to vote, when it comes time to support the Latinos that you have in your own house, you might not even know what their legal status is. You might not even understand what they are, you know, how they're surviving in this valley and some of the issues that they have. And, you know, this is the lady that comes to your house every single week. And it's really interesting to me how, you know, we're seen as this commodity, right? And as soon as things get hard, we're disposable. So it's this interesting dynamic. And, well, you know, who doesn't like cheap labor?
Well,
who doesn't like to make a little extra money? Who doesn't like to not have to pay for health insurance for their workers? I mean, it's this hypocritical, you know, relationship between, you know, the workforce and the people that, you know, take advantage of this. And sometimes they don't feel like they are taking advantage of it. They really feel like, you know, they're helping out an individual and a family. But sometimes it takes more than just giving them work. Sometimes it takes support. Sometimes it takes voting, right, for the right policies and the right people that you know will support that, your babysitter. You know, Walter, this past January, I became an American citizen. And the judge, the federal judge that, you know, swears you in as an American citizen, something that he said that just stuck with me is that you are here to make this country better. You are here to help us the American people see ourselves in the world, not see ourselves, you know, as this isolated country. So it was so interesting. And he even said, do not give up your culture. Do not give up your language. You are here to bring that to our country and make us rich and to bring that into the United States. I thought that was so powerful. And that's, you know, as a federal judge welcoming us, telling us to not give up our culture, to not give up our language, that we are here to make this country better.
That was Beatriz Soto, co-founder of Voces Unidas. To learn more about this organization, go to vocesunidas.org. That's V-O-C-E-S-U-N-I-D-A-S. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories Program. To hear other immigrant stories, go to our website, immigrantstories.net. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Thanks for listening.